This isn't going to be like a formal talk, so to speak, but I'd like to contextualise the day a little bit and also explain some of the rationale for the exercises, the activities we'll be doing. So as I said to begin with, this is a celebration of Sangha. I think this day is an invention of Sangha Rakshita. In the traditional Buddhist world, they definitely celebrate Buddha Day or Wesak, which is the full moon in the month of Wesak, which is April and May. And then they celebrate the first turning of the wheel, the first teaching of the Buddha, which happens 2 lunar months later. And I think Sangha Rakshita thought, well, we celebrate the Buddha Dharma, what about the Sangha? And I'd like to find out the origin of this, but anyway, he seems to have chosen this full moon in, I guess it's, I don't know if it's October, November, or November, December. No. Which actually is traditionally the time when the Buddha taught the Anapanasati Sutta, as it happens. So that's a good enough reason, isn't it? And what we're doing is celebrating this world of friendship, spiritual friendship, of our companions in the Sangha, of teachers in the Sangha. The spirit of Sangha, you could say, which I think we can occasionally touch on. It's something a bit elusive, but there's a definite spirit to a Sangha practicing together. And it's also, there's something marvellous about the Sangha, isn't it? Because the Buddha and the Dharma can, in a way, be idealised. But the Sangha, you can never quite get a perfect Sangha. Even if you think of it as the Arya Sangha, the Sangha of people who have gained some degree of insight, there's always going to be messiness. Even our own teacher, Sangha Rakshita, we know, was a bit messy. And so Sangha touches on a whole kind of realm of vulnerability, of might be kind of social awkwardness, it might be kind of introverts not quite enjoying all these people, it might be that whole delicate area of negotiating friendship, the whole area of projection and disappointment. And the tendrils go very deep, the tendrils this area go very deep into the psyche. And it's precisely because of that that Sangha is so potentially transformative. It's not something we can really keep at an arm's distance. It gets in there. And because it gets right in there, it has the potential to transform us at very deep levels. And I think this is something that we can really be grateful to Sangha Rakshita for realising the potential of Sangha. And I don't quite understand how he saw the transformative power of Sangha, because I don't see that he actually experienced very much of it in his own life. He was never really part of a Sangha other than the traditional Bhikkhu Sangha, of which he was a nominal part, but he didn't really experience it very much. He had spiritual friends in Kalimpong for sure, but he wasn't part of any traditional Tibetan Sangha. So what he's done, maybe by way of compensation, is create this extraordinarily vibrant international Sangha called Sri Ratna. And he created an order and a tradition or a movement. It wasn't a society. He didn't create a society, a sort of loose association of people kind of hanging around, getting teachings and milling around between different societies. It's a definite thing. Sri Ratna is a definite thing. It's a definite identifiable Sangha. And he did that very deliberately, because he seems to have had this very strong intuition or insight into what it is that is transformative about Sangha. And he's laid out a whole great range of teachings which I won't go into. I'll just label them, if you like. There's a whole series of concepts: the group, the spiritual community, the spiritual community as opposed to the group, the individual, the true individual, who is, if you like, or it's one way of describing the what we're trying to become within the Sangha. We're trying to become a true individual. The spiritual community, which we call the order, the Triratna Buddhist order, is theoretically a free association of individuals. So there's a whole load of nuance and subtlety about these teachings, which I can't go into. But I do recommend What is the Sangha? This book, which unfortunately I've just checked, is not in the bookshop, but hopefully you can get hold of a copy. It's also part of the Metro Study course. Fairly extraordinary book, really. Really unpacking the whole realm of the potential of Sangha. And I think we can see Sangha as a bit of a jewel in Triratna's crown. Quite unusual. So one of the main emphases that Bhante has given towards Sangha is the whole area of spiritual friendship. Again, quite unusual, the unpacking that he's done around the value of spiritual friendship, and not just the sort of guru-disciple dimension, but what he calls horizontal spiritual friendship, friendship with our peers. So that's basically all of us. Not all just focused on the great teacher who walks in once a month or whatever it is. And I think we can say we're very good at friendship in our Shrewsbury Sangha. It's a very friendly Sangha. And I want to just draw attention to the word spiritual as part of this spiritual friendship. What is it that makes it spiritual rather than just friendly? So it's rooted in some kind of common vision and practice. Our friendship is rooted in the common vision of awakening and the practices that we undertake here. But there's one particular thing which I'd like to give weight to today, which is Dhammakatha. This word Dhammakatha, which means speaking the Dhamma, speaking the Dhamma. So one way that we can do this is when we're with our friends, we speak the Dhamma. So what does that mean? Well, at an everyday level, we can ask each other about their practice. We can ask our friend about their practice. We can volunteer how our practice is going. We can talk about the study that we might be doing, the Dhamma study, if we're in a study group or reading a book. So that's a fairly obvious level of Dhammakatha. We can always be on the lookout for deepening wherever it's appropriate, because it's quite easy to meet up with our friends and chat about the books we're reading, films we're seeing, whatever it is. And do we take the opportunities to go a bit deeper? Or do we keep things at a sort of slightly comfortable level? There's a whole world of discourse there, but I expect you know what I mean. There's always ways, there's little moments where you can take things, chunk them down a bit. As we're telling the story of our lives to our friends, which of course we do, we say what's been going on in our life, can we take a dharmic perspective on it? And I don't mean just spouting Dharma platitudes, but can we actually see what's happening in our life to some extent through the lens of the Dharma? So maybe that means noticing where the worldly winds are at work. So to some extent stepping out of the usual worldly attitudes of, hey, I've had this great thing, gain, or I've had this terrible thing, loss. I've got this new, I'm famous on YouTube, whatever it is, or I'm not famous, whatever it is. Can we see where the worldly winds are blowing? Can we step out of the Dharma, out of the worldly attitudes, into a more dharmic framework. Can we take some of the emphasis off the kind of outer activities and events in our life and notice more our responses to them? And so in terms of the Sangha night that's going on at the moment, can we notice where we're being reactive and creative in relationship to the outer events of our life? So those are just some kind of possibilities of how we move from a more, if you like, everyday, very worthwhile friendship into a more spiritual friendship, where we're trying to relate from the Dharma and to the Dharma practitioner in the other person. So this is by way of introducing the conversation cafe, which we're going to do after this. So the idea of the conversation cafe is to try and put some Dharmakatha into action. And I'll mention a little bit, I'll set that up a little bit right at the end. One slightly obscure little list that Sangharakshita dug out of I don't know where is a teaching called the Sangraha Vastus, which is sometimes translated as the means of unification. Graha, to sort of grasp or to pull, and sang together, so we're unifying. And it's traditionally a set of four tools, practices, attitudes that a bodhisattva employs to draw a sangha together. And of course these are qualities that we can all put into practice because they're fantastic ways of building sangha. Very good ways of just making friends as well, but very good ways of building sangha. So I'll mention them briefly. The first one is dana, generosity. Second one, kindly or affectionate speech, priyavadata. The third one is just being helpful, beneficial activity, articharya. And the fourth one is sometimes called exemplification, samanata. So I'll say something briefly about these. So dana, you don't need to be told about the attitude of generosity of dana. But how is this valuable in building sangha? Well, I know for myself, when someone gives me an unexpected gift or a card, I'm immediately endeared to them. It's very simple, isn't it? I'm just warm towards them, I open towards them, and I want to give something back. And this is how sangha comes together. We just want to give to each other. Sangharakshita has this image of a glittering ball that's just being tossed between people. We're all sort of throwing these glittering balls to each other. There's a constant exchange of gifts. It's a lovely image. And if there's an attitude of dana within the sangha, it just raises the whole sense of mutual endearment and well-being to a different kind of level. Priyavadata, kindly speech or affectionate speech. I especially want to look at this in terms of appreciation, expressions of appreciation. And in the afternoon we'll be rejoicing in merits within the Mitra ceremony. There's a little section where we'll rejoice in the merits of the Mitras to be. And again, this is a marvellously uplifting practice. I hope you've all experienced something of this where people appreciate you or appreciate someone else. You see someone else being appreciated. It's really encouraging, isn't it? It's a shame when people only get appreciated at their funeral. Let's appreciate each other fairly consistently throughout our lives. It's warming, it's encouraging, it's bonding. And expressions of gratitude go a bit beyond appreciation. I think in expressing gratitude, there's a bit more vulnerability there. You're expressing your own recognition that someone has given you something. It may not be a physical thing, it may be they've affected you in some way that's touched you. So the Pali word for gratitude is katanyata, which is literally recognition of what has been done. By recognizing how we have benefited from each other, we can quite naturally experience gratitude and then express gratitude. In modern positive psychology, you may well be aware that one of the quickest ways, one of the most effective ways of increasing mood, of increasing positive affect, is by reflecting on gratitude. Sometimes I say, write down 10 things each day that you're grateful for. And it sounds a bit kind of naff, kind of positive thinking stuff to me, but I tried it. I'm not very good at maintaining it, but whenever I have tried it, I'm surprised how effective it is. So this afternoon, we are going to have the opportunity to do both of those things, the generosity and the appreciation, because we'll be having the chance to make cards and for our friends in the Sangha, hopefully, and then write nice things inside them. And then give them to the person you want to give them to, if they're here. So I was thinking, we're coming up to Christmas time, isn't it, when loads and loads of cards get exchanged around the world, which is a lovely thing. How about we have Sangha Day cards for members of the Sangha? We give Sangha Day cards because that's what we're really rejoicing in our Sangha. I'll just mention Artacharya and Samanata briefly. So Artacharya, beneficial activity. I think sometimes I envy the Christian churches in this. They can be very, very effective at having networks of helpfulness, looking after the old folks and looking after people when they're ill. And of course, that's an obvious thing for any Sangha to be doing, just at a practical level, helping each other out. And even on a day like this, of course, we can do just that. Sooner or later, shortly we'll be having cups of tea, and tea will need to be made and washed, mugs washed up and so on, and food will need to be laid out and all the rest of it. So yeah, if everyone can just pitch in with that, that would be magnificent. And then Samanata, exemplification. We learn by osmosis. We can learn from books, but we can sort of... it's very difficult to learn from a book how to be kind. You just have to watch someone do it, and then you get what kindness is, don't you? So this is another reason why Sangha is so important. We really have to see spiritual qualities being embodied. That's how we understand the spiritual quality. We see it being embodied in another human being.